This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
All right, before we get to the new information, honestly, amazing information about the January 6th pipe bomber that just came out, let's do a little background and kind of build up to it, shall we? Stuff we've talked about before. So a couple things we have to understand. First, in the Soviet Union, they had a secret police apparatus. And it took various names. You would probably know it as the KGB, but when Stalin was using it, it was the NKVD. Before that, it was the Cheka, whatever. They had a secret police apparatus. And this apparatus was not used to chase down drug dealers and murderers and rapists. It was used to chase down any political opposition or potential political opposition to the communists in power. In China, Mao had a cultural revolution. He mobilized millions of young people in the country. He didn't mobilize them to hunt down and beat up and murder rapists and murderers and thieves. He mobilized them to hunt down his political opposition. I could talk to you about Pol Pot. I could talk to you about the Stasi in East Germany. I could go on and on and on and on and on, but you understand, the communist has always and will always desired to use the power of the state against his domestic political opposition. He thinks about it all the time. When you think about things like the military or the FBI, which we're going to get to in a moment, you probably think about the military defending America, defeating our foreign adversaries, things like that. The communist doesn't think about that at all. He doesn't consider that at all. He sees all those tanks, all those guns, all those bombs, and he thinks, ooh, how could I use that against Republicans? He does. I know that's hard to hear, but he does. And the FBI specifically, which we're going to get to here, the communist doesn't look at the FBI and what it should do the way you do. When you look at the FBI, and I know you don't need any more help to hate the FBI, I'm sure you probably want them to hunt down drug dealers and murderers and serial killers and take down the mob and things like that. The communist doesn't care about any of those things. 35,000 FBI agents, all that power, all those badges, all those guns, what does he want them to do? He wants them to hunt down the political opponents of the communists, arrest them, destroy their lives. That's what he wants. That's why Democrats have spent years, the past couple decades, filling the FBI with committed communists. They wanted the FBI to go a new direction. Now, that brings us to the Biden administration. You are well aware of January 6th. At least you're well aware of the basic facts of it. Now, let's pause on that for a moment. You've heard of the Reichstag fire. We've talked about this before. The Reichstag was the Congress in Hitler's Germany. Congress. You see, Hitler had taken power, but he didn't have complete power, and there were still opposing parties chirping at him, opposing things he wanted to do. Congress burnt down one night. German citizens woke up and picked up the newspaper, and Congress burnt down. Oh, whoa. What to do? What to do? Immediately, Hitler pounced on it. Whether they did it or not, no one will ever really know. Immediately, Hitler pounced on it and used it to send the secret police of the state against his domestic political opposition, hunted them down, arrested them, killed them, and just like that, he had total power. Whatever you believe about January 6th, Democrats thought about it like their Reichstag fire. I know you think they're upset about it, and I know your stupid liberal Aunt Peggy is upset about it, but I promise you this, every communist in Washington, D.C. was thrilled about it. When they saw the tear gas, when they saw the anarchy that day, the busted out windows, they stood back and cheered because they knew it would give them the opportunity to do what they lay in bed dreaming about, sending the state after you. Here was Merrick Garland and Christopher Wray.
That attack, that siege, was criminal behavior, plain and simple, and it's behavior that we, the FBI, view as domestic terrorism. It's got no place in our democracy, and tolerating it would make a mockery of our nation's rule of law.
The Justice Department will hold all January 6 perpetrators at any level accountable under the law. Whether they were present that day or were otherwise criminally responsible for the assault on our democracy.
Did you know that the Federal Bureau of Investigation did this cell phone geolocating thing and the FBI was knocking on the doors of anybody who was even there that day? Did you think you had to hit a police officer or kick in the door? Oh, no, 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 no. The FBI came and paid you a visit if you were even present that day. Over 1,000 arrests. And if Biden had been reelected, the D.C. attorney promised there would be over 1,000 more. Hunting down innocent, crime-free people, sometimes for nothing, sometimes for misdemeanors, and slapping terrorism charges on them. And the FBI did it. And speaking of the FBI, it is weird how well January 6th worked out for Democrats. Isn't it weird? Isn't it weird how convenient that was? Which begs the question, how involved was the FBI that day?
I'm not sure that I can give you that number as I sit here. I'm not sure there were undercover agents on scene.
I find that kind of a remarkable statement, Director. At this point, you don't know whether there were undercover federal agents, FBI agents, in the crowd or in the Capitol on January 6th?
I say that because I want to be very careful. There have been a number of court filings related to some of these topics, and I want to make sure that I stick within what's in...
I understand that. But I thought I heard you say you didn't know whether there were FBI agents or informants or human sources in the Capitol or in vicinity on January 6th. Did I misunderstand you? I thought that's what you said.
Well, I referred very specifically to undercover agents.
Yeah. And so are you acknowledging then there were undercover agents?
As I sit here right now, I do not believe there were undercover agents on scene.
Oh, the lawyers speak. It's all in an effort to avoid perjury. Well, I don't believe, I'm not sure, but you know what that means. They were already there. Now, we'll set aside what I believe about that day. As you know, I believe the federal government did that day. I believe they had feds all over the crowd instigating that thing, trying to make it happen. So, of course, they could arrest you and arrest me if they wanted. But you know what a huge part of that day was? A huge part of the narrative? Pipe bombs. Don't you remember it? It added an extra level of spice to the whole story, didn't it? See, it's one thing for things to get a little rowdy on the steps of the Capitol. It's another thing entirely to have bombs. Thank God they didn't go off. Where were the bombs? I heard Kamala Harris was close to one. Oh my gosh. They were at the DNC. They were at the RNC. There was a bomber? And then we had that video, the picture you're looking at right now, we've actually seen him. He's in a mask. There's a bomber out there. It added spice to it, didn't it? Well, we now have the guy in our hands. And the communists are lying about who he is, and they're lying really, really hard about that. Here was CNN.
And what we've learned is that among the statements that he has made is that he believed the 2020 election was stolen. And so that appears to be the first statement that has been made in this case that might give an indication of a motive of why he may have placed these bombs in those locations.
Guy comes from a family of Democrats. Bail bonds, things like that. Why are they trying so hard? Why are they trying so hard to lie? Oh, it's not just one show either. Show after show after show, they're all out there creating the world of make-believe for your liberal Aunt Peggy, telling her this.
They should believe maybe, what he says.
No, maybe he put a bomb at the DNC because he believed the Democrats stole the election because Republicans and conspiracy theorists pushed that. And he put the bomb at the RNC because the vice president, who was about to be sworn in, was going to ride by that area. There are many scenarios that the prosecution will have to play out this case. But I'm gonna say the thing out loud. that I think everyone is not saying and is actually surprised, and why I think Jeanine Pirro is actually saying it. I think the fact that this man is a black man is surprising to people. I think people thought this was going to be a white man that did this. They were going to be able to say he was a part of the progressive left. And the fact that it's a black man that is saying, I too was susceptible to conspiracy theorists that the president and conservative podcasts were pushing that this election was stolen, is a fact that they were not expecting, and now everyone is on their heels and they're trying to spin it. And I think that might be also why you think, let's not believe his actual story right now.
Like,
he's trying to get both sides.
It's certainly possible.
I mean, so...
Setting aside all the gross stuff, why are they working so hard to maintain the narrative that this guy was a Trump supporter putting bombs out there? Well, now for the new information. Court filings reveal that Biden, Christopher Wray's FBI, knew who this guy was in April of 2021. And let's just skip past all the obvious. Of course they knew who this guy was. This moron had his cell phone in his pocket while he was placing the pipe bombs. As soon as you walk around with your cell phone, whatever you do with it, they can just go back and track where you were and what you were doing. Of course they knew who he was. Now, that's weird when you combine that with this 2023 statement from Christopher Wray about, hey, we got no clue.
Okay. So you were able to arrest hundreds of individuals who were allowed into the Capitol, walked around, took selfies, but we can't find the individual who committed the most dangerous crime and attempted to cause multiple mass casualty events at the Capitol or around the Capitol.
Congressman, we have an entire dedicated team focused specifically on this investigation. We've done thousands of interviews, visited, again, just in the pipe bomb investigation,
okay.
Thousands of interviews, visited thousands of residents and businesses, reviewed millions of pieces of data. There's something like 39,000 video files. We've assessed like 500 or something tips. We've done extensive public publicity. We've increased the reward money. We've got our lab working on it. We've got our WMD directorate working on it. We've got our Office of Technology Division, our cellular analysis team. So the folks that we have working on this investigation are working very aggressively on it. And I, as much as anybody, would like to see it solved.
Even has the cellular analysis team. Thousands of interviews. We've turned over every rock. Nothing we can do. Let's just skip right past it. All the kid games here. They knew exactly who he was, and the FBI chose to cover it up and ignore it because the discovery that the pipe bomber was a leftist would have destroyed the narrative. The narrative the communists were using to throw your grandmother in prison. The FBI is an evil organization that cannot possibly be reformed. And by the way, as I say that, all the credit in the world to Dan Bongino, who walked in, opened up the files, and said, well, obviously we know who the freaking guy is, and they went and arrested him. Nevertheless, the FBI can no longer exist in any form, or they will, as I've told you before many times under the Biden administration, I believe the FBI will cause a civil war in this country. They will. They will destroy so many lives, end so many lives. Eventually, you'll see states join against them, rise up. It's going to be a disaster. This organization has to go away. And I distinctly remember being promised before the election that it would go away. I was told it would be broken up, sent out of D.C., and all that seems to have gone away. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. I'm a chip man. Everybody knows. My wife would describe me as a chip man. Watching something. Hanging out. I've just got a bag of chips. I've always been this way. It's terrible. I just have to snack on chips. But I'm 44. I'm not 24. The days of being able to drink toxic waste and be fine are gone for me. Start to feel it around the midsection. You start to feel fat and bloated. Vandy Crisps. That's your new potato chip. It's fresh. Three ingredients. That's it. No more seed oil garbage. Just potatoes, salt, tallow, and they're fantastic. I would highly recommend the Smokehouse. My son loves the ones that taste like Italian dressing. They have just plain potato chips. Vandy Crisps are your way. You can eat chips guilt-free. Go to VandyCrisps.com/JesseTV. That saves you 25% off your first order. It's the Christmas season. Eat your chips. Enjoy your chips without being fat.
Well, the president does have the proverbial bully pulpit, being the president, and he has continued to say and accuse you of attaining U.S. citizenship illegally. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows I came to the United States at the age of 12, gained my citizenship at the age of 17, and I am an elected representative in the House of Congress, and so the House of Representatives in Congress. And so for me, you know, I look at it as a display of his ignorance, and I see it as a national embarrassment that he continues to say those kind of things, even though he does know what the truth is.
I didn't hear a denial. Maybe the coach did. Joining me now, Coach Tommy Tuberville, senator from the state of Alabama, but apparently he's moving on and moving up, and he's going to be the governor soon. All right, Senator, I heard a lot of things. Sorry, Coach, I apologize. Please don't chew me out. It's right before Christmas. I heard when she got here, I heard that she's elected to the House, but I did not hear a denial, Coach.
No, she's not going to deny. She knows she was wrong. And with all the things that are stirred up now back in her state, with all the Somalians, with all the fraud and stealing taxpayers' money, we're talking billions, somebody needs to pay the price, and it needs to go down to her, because she knew something was going on. She might not have been behind it, but she was either neglecting the problem or for years promoting it. So at the end of the day, you know, we got huge problems with the Muslim community. Now, Jesse, there are some good ones here, but I will say this. If we have good people in this country that are Muslim, that are going by our laws and constitution, not going by Sharia law, they need to help us with people like Ilhan Omar. Help get them out of this country because they're a cancer.
Coach, from what I understand, you're working on that problem from the Senate. Not that I'm hopeful the other dorks in the Senate will help you with it, but what are you trying to do?
Well, we're just trying to bring out and speak out about something that, as you just said, not very popular up here to talk about publicly, but you know, look at Europe. It was not very popular to talk about public there. Now Europe, most of the countries there are gone, and they've lost their streets, they lost their neighborhoods, and they're gonna have to fight in the streets to get their country back. And that doesn't need to happen here. So I'm going to speak out. I'm gonna try to encourage other people to speak out. Let's talk the truth. Let's tell people what's going on. If we don't do it, you know, we're going to pay the price. And next year, Jesse, we got 365 days of celebration all over the country for 250th birthday. We have the Olympics coming. We have the World Cup coming. We have college football, pro football, people everywhere. And just look what happened in Australia. It's coming to a theater near you. We had better prepared. I don't know whether we have enough security, because Joe Biden, Barack Obama allowed all these people to come here, and it is an absolute mess.
Coach, can you help me understand something? I really help everybody understand something. What you just said about Europe is obvious to anybody who even half pays attention, and it saddens me. I don't cheer for that. It's awful. Now that the Islamists have taken over Europe, they're basically screwed without civil war conditions, which is the worst thing in the world. And we're watching it happen here, and yet most Republicans, or at least enough Republicans in D.C., don't feel the need to get on board with your efforts to help. Why? What am I missing? What are they afraid of? I don't understand. Can you help me understand?
Well, again, it goes back to people just afraid to lose a vote, I guess. I don't get involved in people's business. I just speak how I believe that senators and leaders of our country should speak. Speak out against the evils that are coming across our borders. Our number one job up here, Jesse, is to make sure that the people in this country are safe, and we're doing a very poor job of it. I accolades out to Pete Hegseth and Marco Rubio. They're doing a great job taking it to the cartel and the narco terrorists, but that's about it. I mean, at the end of the day, President Trump has put out a pretty much a memo saying, hey, we have got to save this country, and they ran on it for this election, and we need to get behind him, and we need to support him, and quit worrying about your own damn election.
Speaking of President Trump and narco terrorists, here's what he said about fentanyl.
Today I'm taking one more step to protect Americans from the scourge of deadly fentanyl flooding into our country. With this historic executive order I will sign today, we're formally classifying fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction, which is what it is. No bomb does what this is doing. 200,000 to 300,000 people die every year that we know of. So we're formally classifying fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction.
Well, Coach, that has to mean something, meaning that's almost sounds like a setup to me. Call me suspicious. The president announces there's a press conference tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern time. About 8 hours before that, he classifies fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction. Should I be reading something into that? I did go to community college.
Well, I think you're going to start seeing a bigger push, even from the White House. President Trump is trying to solve all these problems around the world, and sometimes he doesn't want to step on the toes of people that might have some influence. But I think he's about had it also. If you go back and look what happened at Australia last week, the two young people that got killed up in Brown University, the two people from Iowa that will come back to Dover Air Force Base tomorrow, the National Guard people, two National Guard people killed in Washington, D.C. It is out of control, and politicians are responsible for it. Not President Trump. The politicians in D.C. are responsible for this, and we better start talking about it. But we're more worried more about health care, which we should be. But we can play ball at the same time and do other things. But for some reason, we don't do that up here.
Coach, I have to ask before you go. You're running for governor in the state of Alabama. Obviously, the state of Alabama is pretty pleased with you. They keep sending you to the Senate, but it's got to be uncomfortable for you in Tuscaloosa, right? You've got to get heckled. You're the Auburn football coach.
Well, I've been to some games over there. It's been quite a while since I was at Auburn, about 15 years. So a lot of people have forgotten about it. But I just love football. I love sports. And, you know, Alabama's playing in the playoffs this week. It's not Auburn, but it's Alabama. We're represented. I'll put it that way. But big week for college sports this week. But this NIL, you know, we need to get on that one day, Jesse. It is killing our sports, college sports, right and left. It's unfortunate.
How do you rein it in, Coach? Because everyone knows why it happened, right? We got too far one way, but now it's so far the other way. It's worse than the NFL now. You can't keep a player more than a year. It's freaking terrible.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, this is supposed to be about education, so you shouldn't be able to sell your talents to another team every year. There's some players that have transferred four or five times and have gotten up to 7 years of eligibility. I mean, you can't even come close to get an education. We've got to put some restrictions on the transfer portal. I'm all for them making money. The cat's out of the bag. So be it. Go and make all the money you want to make. But we can't allow them just to jump up and run for another $15,000, $20,000, whether they like the coach or didn't like the school or think they can get a little bit more money at another school. It's way out of control.
Yeah, it is. Coach, I appreciate you. Have a Merry Christmas, sir. Your gut starts to matter more to you as you get older. When you're young, at least when I was young, I could eat anything. I could eat a pizza with extra jalapenos on it at 11 o'clock at night, right before bed. Sleep like a baby. Wake up, feel fine. You remember what those days were like? Those days are gone, aren't they? It's gone. Now we have to be more conscious about our gut health. My sister's the one who told me about cowboy colostrum. She said, oh man, my gut's, it's been feeling so good. I feel like I'm 20 again. So I decided, okay, I'll try it. I pour a couple scoops of my coffee in the morning. I have the chocolate one. I essentially have a chocolate cup of coffee. No gut problems, ever, no matter what. Stuff is friggin' miraculous. You want to try some cowboy colostrum? They have vanilla, chocolate, strawberries, delicious. Put it in some milk. Put it in a cup of coffee. Go to cowboycolostrum.com. Just use the code JesseTV. All right. So in a few minutes, we're going to interview Katie Zachariah. And I'll tell you right now, she's pretty somber on how we're looking for the midterms and potentially 2028. So whether or not that happens, we have to assume we're approaching a time where we might lose power, power in Washington, D.C. We know how evil the communists are. We remember it wasn't ancient history. We remember how they operated under Joe Biden, arresting, murdering their political opponents. Everything had to be gay. It was just the worst friggin' thing in the world. And we know, you know, I know, they'll do worse next time. They're not sorry. They're not regretful. They think they didn't bring in enough illegals last time. So that's what we're facing if the communists come back to power. So what I'm about to say, I want you to know that's where I'm coming from when I say what I'm about to say. We have to operate with a level of seriousness and viciousness. We have to be intelligent with how we're fighting right now. We can't afford mistakes. There was a story yesterday. I'm just going to touch on it just for a minute. Vanity Fair. Vanity Fair, communist magazine. Vanity Fair puts out a nasty hit piece on Susie Wiles, White House chief of staff. It's not just a hit piece on Susie Wiles. They stooped so low as to find the worst picture of Caroline Leavitt ever and published it. I mean, they just did everybody dirty in the whole thing. Okay. They're communists. That's what they do. Susie Wiles sat down with Vanity Fair for 11 straight days. 11 days? We gave 11 days to Vanity Fair, giving them all the ammunition they need to create a 24-hour news cycle. Of course, taking words out of context, and this, of course they did, of course they would, lying about everything. This is unacceptable. We don't have time for this. The urgency needs to be there. We don't have time for Washington people to fall in love with the thought of maybe getting a lovely article in the New York Times or Vanity Fair about themselves. And that's exactly what happens. They get out on the campaign trail and they talk to you and they talk to me and they're going to fight the system and they're going to drain the swamp and they're going to do all these things. And then they get to Washington, D.C. and they just can't help themselves. The siren song of maybe getting a nice piece in Vanity Fair you can show your mother is too much, and soon we're getting blasted for it. It's not the end of the world. It's yesterday's news. It's not the end of the world. But it is indicative that maybe we're not operating with the level of seriousness and urgency we should. When the communists come back to power, they're going to do everything they can to make sure we never have another shot at it. That's how nasty and demonic these people are. You think they arrested a lot of Republicans last time? I think they destroyed a lot of people in the Trump administration last time, including attempts to destroy Trump himself. Last time was the appetizer. Last time was the Cheddar Bay biscuits before Red Lobster brings you the main course. We have to be better. We have to be sharper. This is not good enough. White House, I hope you're listening. That may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. I like companies that hire Americans. It's become almost an obsession of mine. I'll get on the website when I'm thinking about buying something, and I want to see, do you hire Americans? You know, all these call centers. You know why they put them overseas, right? It's cheaper. You don't care about Americans or American jobs. You go hire click at some dump where they don't even have toilets. And you pay him nothing. And that's the reason you're on the phone. What? I don't. And he can't understand you. It's a nightmare. At Pure Talk, the American cell phone company, they hire Americans who speak English. And they're actually pleasant. Switch from Verizon. Switch from AT&T. Switch from T-Mobile. Switch to the company that cares enough about this country to hire Americans. They'll charge you less. They're on the same towers. Be pro-American. All right? PureTalk.com/JesseTV.
As for the Vanity Fair article, Michael, I'll take your question directly. This is, unfortunately, another example of disingenuous reporting, where you have a reporter who took the chief of staff's words wildly out of context, did not include the context those conversations were had within. And then further, I think the most egregious part of this article was the bias of omission that was clearly present. And we see a lot of this when dealing with the media every day. You will leave out important context, leave out comments and facts. You know, many people in this building spoke with that reporter, and those comments were never included in the story, probably because it didn't push this false narrative of chaos and confusion that the reporter was clearly trying to push.
Joining me now, Katie Zachariah, legal and political strategist. Katie, I think very highly of Caroline Leavitt. I think she's super sharp, thinks she's excellent at her job. She deals with the media every day. Susie Wiles deals with the media every single day. How can you be so dumb to sit down with them for 11 days and think you're going to get any other result than the one you got? That's my problem with the whole thing.
I agree with you. I love President Trump on the campaign trail. He used this poem called The Snake, and it was used in the context of immigration and illegal immigration, where this woman lets in this snake from the cold, and she warms it up, and eventually the snake bites her and kills her. But why is this the biggest analogy in my mind to an interview, 11 interviews with Vanity Fair? They have basically decided to deny what a snake is and invite the snake into their home, the White House, and expect the snake to not have snake-like traits, to not turn around and bite them when it is beneficial. So I'm completely with you. I think they might have set out with the right intent, that they wanted to present a nicer, more beautiful look of the White House, but they're dealing with a snake. That's always going to be a snake. And eventually, what does the snake say at the end of President Trump's poem? "Oh, shut up, silly woman," said the reptile with a grin. "You knew damn well I was a snake before you took me in." And in my mind, this is the exact equivalent of Vanity Fair. Vanity Fair, for the last 10 or 11 or 12 years, has done nothing but hit pieces and been vile to President Trump. Why in 2025 are we thinking that this is any different, Jesse?
I don't know. By the way, my wife would 100% take a snake in. I know she would. She'd be like, "It's sick," or something. I know she would do that. All right. It's part of the problem, Katie, that even if you have the right intention, you get to D.C., whether you're a senator in the White House, you still want that puff piece in the New York Times. You can't help yourself. You want CBS to give you a glowing profile. You want Vanity Fair to make your eyes look pretty. It's just, it's like they can't, it's like the sirens. They can't stay away from them.
Right. I think it's exactly what you're saying. People are drawn to this. Except when you're outside of D.C., it's so easy to look at Vanity Fair, Vogue, all these different journals and different newspapers and see for what it is. But then you get there and they lure this bright, shiny object in front of you. We want to do a nice puff piece. We want to look, make you look good. But they're never going to change. They're never going to change. And this is part of the problem. Is it the chicken or the egg? Are they feeding off of people's egos to continue making them look good and bolster them in the media? What if all this went away? What if we just focused on, it doesn't even have to be all right-wing media, but fair and balanced media, media that's somewhat center, taking kind of this middle of the road? No, they still go to the far left, the Washington Post, the New York Times, Vanity Fair, and they want this nice article. It's never going to happen. It's never going to happen until you get rid of the leadership at these different journals. Washington Post, for instance. These types of hit pieces are forevermore going to occur until they decide to get rid of all of the people running it, Jesse.
Katie, the stakes are obviously high. Everyone remembers how the communists operated under Joe Biden for 4 years. And for them, that was just wetting their whistle. That was just an appetizer. What's going to happen if we lose the House of Representatives at the midterms?
I've been so, so clear on this, Jesse. We will lose. First, I'll go on the long game. We will lose the 28th presidential. The Republicans, it is my opinion that if we do not keep the House, President Trump will be suffering under all of the Hakeem Jeffries impeachment inquiries, and we will be on the complete defense for the final 2 years of President Trump's term. We will get nothing done, nothing accomplished. We're already not getting anything accomplished in my mind. There is so much the House and Senate could be doing. There is so much that they could be implementing, and they are just slow rolling every single thing. So what happens when the Democrats regain majority? Nancy Pelosi was just on an interview with USA Today, and she was asked, are you confident that that the Democrats will be able to take the majority? And she said, I'm not confident. I am sure of it. I am sure we're going to take it. It's only 3 seats that's necessary. And while she's a little bit senile in these days, I actually agree, unless the Republicans really change the trajectory for and what they're doing, the Miami mayoral race was the bellwether for me, that the Republican, we lost a stronghold, a Republican stronghold, where a Republican was mayor for 30 years. While it's a nonpartisan office, we all know it is, and we lost to a Democrat. And I think this is a key indication that this was the Republican that lost was Trump-backed, and we still lost it in Florida, of all places. And so if the Republicans don't get serious, and I mean extremely serious, about healthcare overhaul, Speaker Johnson just said he was going to implement all of the president's or many of the president's executive orders. Why are we waiting so long to do all of this, Jesse? We have a very short amount of time to start accomplishing all this. And it just seems like they're dragging their feet and resisting the president at every step of the way. So what happens in 26? I don't think it's looking good for the Republicans right now. I really don't. And then long game, it doesn't look good for 28 presidential.
Katie, I know it seems nonsensical, but do Republicans want to be in the minority? Then you don't have to actually do anything. You don't have to have any courage at all. You can just sit there and whine and complain and send out fundraising texts to you and me. Send me $20. But I feel like they want to be in the minority.
It feels that way. It feels we have this golden opportunity, right? We worked so hard. I worked so hard, and they worked so hard, allegedly, to get President Trump back in office after 4 years of the disaster of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And we beat Kamala, and we beat her really well. However, we're not taking advantage of this time that we have in office. So do Republicans want to be in the minority? You make a great point. They're not fighting like they want to be in the majority. What does that look like? I know that nuking the filibuster can be controversial. It has its downsides. It has its upsides. If the Democrats were in power and they knew that 26 midterms were looming and they were going to likely lose, and then that then had an indication that they would likely lose the presidency, they would be doing everything in their power to be ramming through their agenda. And yet Republicans want to talk about blue slip courtesy and not nuking the filibuster because it could come back and haunt us. Jesse, if they don't pass voter ID, proof of citizenship under the SAVE Act, Republicans will likely not win for a very long time if we don't have a regulation on our election. So I don't know why they want to be so weak in the knee. I honestly, I don't.
Katie, what is this blue slip stuff? Can you explain it to stupid people like me? Because Trump is super hot on it. He's angry with Republicans about it. What does this mean?
So the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is led by Chuck Grassley right now, the blue slip existed about since 1917. And what it is it gives the home state senators. So let's use Alina Habba's case, for example. So President Trump nominated his former attorney, Alina Habba, to be the U.S. attorney in New Jersey. And what is the blue slip? So the blue slip gives Andy Kim and Cory Booker, the two home senators from New Jersey, the ability to basically say, we don't want Alina to be in office, and submit that to Chuck Grassley. And then Alina Habba does not get an opportunity to even go through a full Senate hearing, a full Senate committee hearing and nomination process. She just gets overridden by the two home state senators. And again, this is not codified in any senatorial rules. There is no framework for this except tradition and policy. And it existed at a time when you could, where partisan politics, even 20 years ago, were not so hell-bent on blocking anything against President Trump did, or a Republican or Democrat did. They could actually maybe get through some Republicans in a blue state or Democrats in a red state. But we don't live in that time anymore, Jesse, where in California, you're going to have these Adam Schiff override a U.S. attorney appointment by President Trump or Cory Booker for Alina Haba. And so it's outdated. In my mind, it really you look at two different processes. You look at U.S. attorneys, which kind of fall under the DOJ and the president's executive authority and his Article II powers. And then you look at the judges, that right now it's just specifically district court judges. Actually, Grassley kind of moved it over to circuit court judges, where you could go through a full confirmation process and not the blue slips, but district court judges still go under the blue slip process. And I look at the infringement on his ability to actually execute criminal justice proceedings, which is under his Article II powers and under the DOJ. And we have two active grand jury indictments for Comey and Letitia James sitting in Virginia, and a U.S. attorney that they will not approve, that the two home senators in Virginia have said, we're not going to approve Lindsey Halligan. And so we can't actually execute on these two standing grand jury indictments because we don't have a prosecutor. So they're using this tradition to block the president's ability to execute on criminal justice reform, criminal justice and prosecutorial duties, which is an extension of his executive power. So whether it can build to this, does he have a viable case or a viable lawsuit? All I will say is it infringes on his Article II powers for appointments and then execution powers on prosecutions. And that is a dangerous place when we have people like Comey and James that need to be held accountable, Jesse.
Gosh, we are so freaking screwed. Katie, you have a Merry Christmas, all right? Gosh. All right, it is time to lighten the mood, and it's Christmas time. It's a wonderful, wonderful time of year, and I'll tell you something that I at least attempt to teach my sons, that remember, Christmas is about giving things, not getting things. My son said the other day, it was last week, something like that, he said, Dad, I think I figured out what I want for Christmas. And I said, have you figured out what you want to give for Christmas? Christmas is about giving things. Give wonderful things to people. And you're sitting here watching, I'm right. You have options. I feel obligated to give you a wonderful Christmas present. So, from us here on I'm Right in the First, Merry Christmas. That's wonderful. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.